And therefore, it's not an expedient. But it could be done just as simply. The building has no relationship to the worship itself. That is no essential relationship. And it's always been a little strange to me that brethren were perfectly willing to have drinking fountains in the church building, but no eating place. And yet the passage they cite, have you not houses to eat and drink in? They always say eat, but they usually forget about the drinking. Now, the truth of business is that what Paul was condemning in 1 Corinthians 11 was the fact they were corrupting the Lord's Supper by the introduction of common meals on the Lord's table. That's what made it wrong. And that's why we would oppose that practice. But it enters not into the question of the eating about the property. A while back, I was in a meeting in a far west Texas town. And a sister walked by me at the door one day, highly antagonistic. She said, I don't like what I see going on around here. I said, well, I haven't seen anything around here I didn't like. What is it you don't like about it? Why, she says, I don't like the idea of having meals here on church property. I said, I take it then you're opposed to the preacher's home over here because they have meals over there three times a day on church property. Well, she just glared at me and ran on out. So I assume that some people make a difference between the church building and the preacher's home, thinking one place is right to eat and the other isn't. Anybody know anything further on that? All right, we got two. We'll take you first and then you.
A few years ago, when this matter was going on, a church of my acquaintance, one Saturday, a bunch of brethren got together to work, and among them was a brother who opposed eating in the church, you know, church house. They all brought a sack of lunch, and along about 11 o'clock came up a rain, and they had to go inside. They sat down and eat their lunch. And some of the brethren said, go on, get out of here. Here you are eating in the church today. It's a thing you don't believe in.
Yes, sir. I know of a preacher that is violently opposed to the matter of eating on church property. But he lives about 3 or 4 miles out in the country, which makes it inconvenient for him to go home for lunch every day. There's a Dairy Queen right across the street from the church building. He proceeds to go over and get him a sandwich and a malted milk, and he sets it on his desk in the church study and eats it every day and preaches against eating in the church building. Now, to him, there's no inconsistency there at all, because he thinks that that's not what he is opposed to. And yet, to me, it's a glaring inconsistency, all right?
I wish you would comment on the clause in the deed. Do you not think that this shows a lack of confidence in the eldership? You have to put a clause in the deed so you can't move a piano in or cannot eat in the building or so on.
I think it shows a lack of confidence in the brethren that will believe and practice anything on down the line, because that's the very thing that's happened. We lost our property all over the brotherhood simply from a failure to recognize that brethren will not always be faithful. All right, that's just as good a cue as any, and I want to bring it up here because I want us to consider it. My brethren, back about 18 and 80 and 90 and 1900, from the literature of that day, you'll learn that the church was exceedingly strong across Indiana, Illinois, and particularly in Missouri. Some of the ablest preachers of all time preached extensively in those areas. But when digression came, all of those congregations, almost without exception, went into digression. Eventually, the church lost its identity. The church began that painful, agonizing experience of starting all over again in rented store buildings and abandoned schoolhouses, and build up to our present proud position. We're on the verge today of seeing that happen again. And the tragedy of it is that most brethren today could care less about it. My observation, and I think it's as wide as any, and it's from brotherhood, it's all over the brotherhood, from coast to coast, is that in every area of the church, of the brotherhood today, there are liberal elements that would, if they could, completely change our image and destroy our present position. All right, sir.
May I further clarify what I meant? Do you think it's proper to put a clause that you cannot move a piano in for a wedding, not for the worship service, but for a wedding or a funeral?
Well, The only thing is, one of them would be a specific statement, the other a general statement. Suppose that you just said, must not bring it in for a wedding. Well, they wouldn't say anything about bring in for a young people's meeting. So you got to make it a general statement rather than specific in order to include any possible use of it. Now, here is the way the thing started. Let me tell you this. The way the instrument came in was not through the front door. It is from the basement up the steps. The way it came is the same way that the mourner's bench is coming into the church today. You know how it happened? They taught that the Sunday school is no part of the worship, which is conducted in the basement. The youngsters down there were permitted to have a piano. They used it. They liked it. When they grew up, they had no objection. The only thing is they just moved it from the basement up to the first floor. Today, in many places, it hasn't been 2 weeks since I saw an instance of it, or at least an instance of it happened in an area where I was in a meeting. A group of youngsters met together in which girls stood up and preached to the crowd. Now, they went down to a recreational hall, mind you. Now, what had been the difference in doing it in the church building? The elders wouldn't have allowed it in the church building, but they let them go down to a recreational hall. Now, you know the reason is because there is still that recognition of the fact that women ought not to speak in a public assembly in the church building. If you get those girls accustomed to doing that in religious meetings elsewhere, and it won't be long till they'll be wanting to do it in the church building, and then the next generation, they will.
Still on the subject of the building, but it's a little different matter besides the heating of the building and so on. Would you comment regarding this idea that evidently some have, or are beginning to have, or at least think it would be fine, of selling our buildings maybe to meet in homes? I don't believe the purpose for it would be to prove that we don't have to have a building.
Well, in the first place, that is stemming from this viewpoint that's characteristic of many liberal-minded brethren among us today, that they're simply against the status quo. They're against what we've been for through the years. That's it. So the idea is to create an entirely different spiritual atmosphere and to get away from what they call the practices of the establishment. I heard a young fellow before a group of 250 young people out on the West Coast just a short time ago for 45 minutes ridicule the church. Now, mind you, not the people of the church, not the practices of the church, but the church itself as an institution. Among other things, he told those young people, don't you let people tell you you got to go to church to worship God. You can worship God just as well one place as you can in another. And besides that, the church is made up, he said, largely of hypocrites anyway. I thought he ought to have been taken out of the pulpit. And yet, in spite of the fact that they were hosting an annual affair of young people from all over a state, one of the northwestern states, there wasn't an elder of the congregation present, not a one of them. All right, further.
First of all, a statement I'd like to for you to comment probably on is this. We quite often talk about a worship service. The Bible doesn't talk about a worship service, it talks about worship. And we make some distinctions here that are very artificial. But also on this matter of the deed, is it not true that a congregation goes to one and sees the deed, who made the deed, very easily changes? Also, every doctrine that comes in to be false, the almost impossible to anticipate it. There really is nothing that will take the place of constant vigilance and spiritual
meaning. Well, indeed, that's exactly right. But still, the brethren have a right to protect the property that they put their money into. And I think they talk about there being such a thing as academic freedom. We had an example of that up here at the Union University some time ago, and there was quite a disturbance up there about some of those teachers up there not wanting to teach the basic principles of the Union University. I certainly hold no brief for Union University. I think they're in error, tragic error. But I think they have a right to expect that the people that they hire will teach what they're hired to teach. If they don't, they ought to be fired. And that's the same thing as true with reference to our people, too. There's such a thing as academic honesty as well as academic liberty. And when a teacher or for that matter a preacher, preaching for a congregation, knows that he's no longer in sympathy with the positions that the brethren employed him to teach, he ought to have the decency and the honesty and integrity of a purpose to quit. And that's my feeling exactly. About. All right, John Harris back there. Brother Harris, what is it?
Brother Giant Woodbass. They had weddings, they didn't have the organ or the piano, but they had a record player in the back that played on the record with the wedding march.
Well, now again, we get back to the question of what constitutes worship, and as we decided a while ago, it's not, a wedding is not worship. The same thing would be true of any sort of secular participation. I don't consider that a wedding is religious worship. Now, I wanted to comment briefly on a statement that one of the brethren made just now. I think he's entirely correct about this redundancy that's often used about a worship service. I think that's an objectionable statement. I think that the idea back of it is good, but it's my conviction that we make a mistake in trying to distinguish fully between worship and service. Now, I'm aware that each has its own respective sphere, but there's an element of each in the other. Now, sometimes I see on a building, or rather on the door, just coming into the vestibule in some buildings, enter to worship and leave to serve. Well, now, the idea back of that is good. But that conveys, I think, not a scriptural viewpoint. Because there's an element of service in worship. Whenever you worship God, you're serving God. There's an element of worship in service. When you carry a basket of goods out here to a poor family, it's Christian service, of course. But then the reason for it is because of your relationship to God and your recognition of obligation to Him. Now, I'm not saying that there are not times and places for it. Don't misunderstand me. You're not to carry that to the point of saying, well, therefore, you can worship God anywhere. You can't do it. You can worship God only in His appointed places and times, which is the Lord's Day. All right?
What word don't you believe it's an unwise practice to distinguish somewhat between Bible study and worship? We commonly say, or we have a Bible study in the worship level. Jesus said, in vain do they worship me, teaching or doctrines, commandments of men. If the commandments of men comes to
well, that distinction was made way back yonder for the purpose of satisfying the anti-Sunday school people who were opposed to women participating in anything that smacked of worship, but then they were willing to say that, well, it is an element of teaching involved that's not worship. Now, that was a wrong basis upon which to argue it, and I never did argue it on that basis. I argued it on the ground it was not where they were doing it, but it was the type of work that they were doing that determined whether it was right or wrong. Now you just take a statement. 1 Timothy 2:11 and 12. I suffer not a woman to teach, nor to usurp authority over the man, but to be in silence. Now I had 21 debates on that question before they finally quit us on the Sunday school question years and years ago. I used to have those fellows get up and very pompously and with great emphasis and complete satisfaction say, I suffer not a woman to teach. And that settles it, he said. Paul just forbade a woman to teach. Well, I would answer by saying, then, what you mean is, I suffer not a woman to teach, period. Yes, that's what I mean, he said. All right, she can't teach English in high school. Oh, no, no, it doesn't mean that. It means she can't teach religion. Yeah, that's what it means. All right, she can't tell her children bedtime stories at home then. Oh, no, it doesn't mean that. It means she can't teach religion in public. Well, then that's what it means, that she can't teach religion in public. Yes, that's what it means, you'll say. All right, the only place where she can't teach is the place where she can't usurp authority. But the only place she can't teach is public. Therefore, the only place she can't usurp authority is public. So she could usurp authority privately all she wanted to, couldn't she? Oh, no, he said. So when he gets through with it, he's got a lot of conditions attached. The truth of the business is that Paul sets out the condition, I suffer not a woman to teach, nor to have dominion over the man, a prepositional phrase governing the teaching and man. All right, Brother Harper.
In other words, on your instrument, church, I got to ask this question. Why do they want what they call a church wedding in the first place?
That's a good question. That's the question I raised a while ago. If they want to have that kind of a wedding, why don't they go where they have that kind of music? Well, that's my feeling about it exactly, and I wouldn't hesitate to say so.
In the statement that you made a while ago on the evolution type of theories and such, I had an article brought up before me that I thought was quite good. In the statement that you made about it being a 24-hour day, at the end of each day as it was created, this article pointed out that the writer so states in there that it was the evening and the morning of the first day, the evening and the morning of the second. Also, at the same time, I have somewhat of a question. It's been brought up about your funeral services and such. Sometimes you'll have some of the members of the congregation that will assist in a funeral service in which they will sing due to the bereavement of the family. The family can be members of the body of Christ, but they do not feel like singing at this present time due to the loss of one. But one has made the accusation that this constitutes a chorale or a chorus, the same as you have in your denominations, and that this is at a time of worship, and therefore is something that is sinful in the sight of God. Would you comment on that?
Well, I would not agree with the viewpoint that you've indicated somebody has expressed. I would certainly feel that under those circumstances it would be entirely in order to have singing as we do. I don't think it indicates on their part any lack of respect for our devotion to God at all, because under the circumstances they can't. Now, we talk about participating with the instrument. What about participating in the contribution in one of these denominational churches? What would be wrong with that? Can't a person give of his means under circumstances that he chooses? What would be wrong with that? Well, of course, the same thing. It would be supporting a practice which we believe to be contrary to the Word of God. The Hebrew in Hebrews 1 is literally day 1, day 2, which emphasizes all the more that it's a specific day. And many arguments that can be made in support of the fact that there are days of 24 hours each. For example, botany, the field of plant life, came into existence on the fourth day. Now, on the assumption that those days were long geological ages, half of each one of them was in darkness. And however long the thing was, half of it was dark. Well, on the assumption that they were geological ages, then you'd have plant life surviving through half of a geological age in total darkness. That would be millions of years on the most conservative estimate. And we all know that plant life cannot survive without sunlight regularly. And so that's another argument against it. Now, I'm aware of the fact that when you get back into that area and deal in these long periods, there's no way of knowing as to how far back it was and as to what conditions prevail. But I still believe that those days were days, literal days, days of 24 hours each. Malcolm Hill.
Brother Woods, always when I hear people arguing about this, saying they are longer periods of time than 24 hours, back in my mind I say to myself, why would a man question that first? If he believes in the power of God and almightiness as we teach, I've never had a problem with harmonizing that at all with what the Bible teaches.
I think the Lord could have done it in 24 minutes as well as in 24 hours. The very fact, though, that it says a day then leads us to the conclusion that it was a day. I've never been upset or disturbed with the efforts of men to set a date or fix an age for those matters back there. That was amusingly demonstrated some time back. A group of scientists were going through the Yellowstone National Park. One of them in the crowd, evidently a wit, decided to have a little fun out of one of the guides. So he turned to a guide and said, how old are these formations? And the fellow, without hesitation, and very soberly said, 50,000 and 8 years old. Well, that stirred their curiosity. They were given to answering such questions in round numbers, and since he'd attached a specific time there, 8 years, they said, explain that. Well, he said, just like this. When I started work here, they said these things were 50,000 years old. He said, I've been on the job now. Good. Who was the young man in the back there that we didn't acknowledge?
He said you'd answer them.
All right. All right, Brother Dunn.
Brother Woods, I'd like for you to comment concerning music and worship. Last week, we heard a brother say that our opposition to choral singing and worship is traditional. Also, the argument has been made recently on 1 Corinthians 14:26. Then he have a song. be all right for us to have souls in our worship.
I never cease to get amazed at my brethren how bad they can miss a point once in a while. In 1 Corinthians 14, Paul is rebuking those brethren over there for one of them getting up with a psalm and another with a prophecy and so on. And yet brethren will so completely ignore the context that they take that as an endorsement of. I don't know what you can do with people like that. Now, as to giving up our traditions, and we only have about two or three more minutes, I'd like to point out this. The only traditions I hold are the traditions of the apostles. They talk about us giving up our traditions. Well, what do they mean we ought to give up? I would be glad to see it spelled out. From this very stand here a year ago, I made the statement that there wasn't a single cardinal doctrine that I was taught when I was in school here 42 years ago that I didn't believe then and now just as strongly and implicitly as I did when I was taught it. When it came through the grist of a liberal preacher on the West Coast and appeared in his bulletin, which was picked up and printed widely in liberal bulletins all over the country, it said a well-known preacher in the East said he hadn't changed his mind about any matter in 42 years. I addressed that brother a letter in which I said to him, now in the first place, that's a distortion of what I said. But in the second place, since you ridicule me for saying that I believe the same things that I've believed all along through the years, I take it that you don't. All right, I'm interested now in knowing what they are. Please list them, point by point, the things that you once believed that you no longer believe. Well, that's been nearly 12 months ago, and he hasn't got around to answering my letter as yet. Friends, we face a critical situation. May the Lord help us all, if we love the cause of the Lord, to stand up and fight in its defense. The time is gone. Thank you.